This is an interview with Sarah Knight for the Youngstown State University Early Education Project by Caroline Wilms Hall at my home on April 29th, 1980 at 7 p.m. Okay, Sarah, would you tell us something about your parents?
Well, my parents were very strong for education. When I started the school, my mother wanted me to do so well because her sister-in-law and her sister were teachers. So every time, my two brothers had preceded me in school, and they were always came home with good grades, and we were always had to sit down at the table and start immediately on our work. And so when I came along, I wasn't as studious as my brothers, but I went to school. I remember the first day of school. And I walked up, my mother knew the teacher, and her name was Hazel. And I said, "Good morning, Hazel, and I'm going to be a teacher just like you." And she said to me, "Well, Sarah, it's all right for you to be a teacher, but you must call me Miss Minto." Now, my mother always had the teachers out for dinner, you know, and she'd visit the school. Now, so happened my mother was a very beautiful lady, and she'd come to school in her furs, and she was quite a fancy dresser, and she'd come to school, and I'd be surprised when my mother came to school. Now, later on, my dad, because I went to school in the pre-depression years and depression years of grade school, he had to have three jobs. He farmed, and he worked in the coal mines, and he was also the custodian of the school. So when he was custodian of the school, that was something. Because in those days, a custodian, when something was dusty, I so well remember second grade. Now, second grade was one of my traumatic experiences. There was dust on the windowsill one day, and so Mrs. Fell, the second grade teacher, called my father up to dust off the windowsills, etc. Now, Mrs. Fell was one of those who never moved from her desk. She hardly ever mingled with the second graders. So I was a kid that had to go to the toilet, and it was the days when you put one finger up and two for more exotic things. So I put one finger up, and I thought she had nodded yes. So I trot my little second grade body downstairs to the toilet area. And when I come back, Mrs. Fell was waiting for me. And she shook me up against the cloakroom door and just went back and forth and back and forth. And I went home and told my mother that. Well, it was soon after that. My mother came to talk to the principal, and soon after that, I was transferred to third grade, where I met a formidable teacher in the name of Miss Rushenberg, who was an excellent teacher, as I look back now. For example, we had a store in our room, you know, and bought and sold things that I had at home, and I brought one of those log cabin syrup things, as I remember, and I see now they're collector's items at flea markets. But then I was, everything, Miss Rushenberg, it took me a while to come from 90s, then I went back to 80s because third grade was pretty hard to come from 6 weeks of second grade to third grade. Well, then I went into fourth grade, and that was comme ci, comme ça, but fifth grade was where I met a teacher of stern disciplinarian parts. For example, we were still getting immigrants because I went to school in a coal mining town, had a mile and a quarter to walk from the country, and I was probably two in the group that had a name you could pronounce easily. The rest were Budinsky, Delonsky, Bytosh, Topakovich. And I was really a minority. But this teacher, this boy came in. We had a big class in fifth grade, and we were in a portable building. The main brick building was where we had to go to the restroom. Well, anyway, this immigrant came in, and he couldn't speak English. So Mrs. Hampson took it upon herself to teach him English, as well as the reading, writing, arithmetic, geography, history, and all that we had. But he was much taller. Well, first of all, with Mrs. Hampson, you had a routine. She was queen of the room. When she came in, it was your duty to hang up her coat, to take off her boots, to give her homage. I didn't go like that. And when you took your seat, you were not to utter one word unless you were called upon. Well, coming back to this boy, he gave her some opposition one day, and she took her fist. She was going to hit him, but she didn't hit him, but she made him sit sort of hunched up on the railing that went around our room in that position for almost an hour. It seemed it probably wasn't that long. Well, another one of her favorite tricks, and this was the only time I got 100%, almost an average, because in spelling, if you missed a word, you all lined up and got a crack over your hand for every word you missed. And one little thing wrong with arithmetic problem, you stayed in. If there was a penny lost, you stayed in until that penny was found. At lunchtime, she inspected your lunches to see if they were nutritionally packed and etc. And she took over every part of your life from the moment you came in to the moment you left. Well, it so happened that this was Mrs. Hampson's last year. We didn't know that. Came the last day of school, and we could bring our sisters, our brothers, our dogs, our cats, everything. And she had given me a little seashell from the cupboard. And she asked me if I would give it to a little girl. She didn't have anything to give the little girl. And I saw Mrs. Hampson was crying, and I thought, why would that teacher be crying? Now, really and truly, I took all the hard discipline because I was disciplined at home, and even though I wasn't disciplined that strictly, it didn't seem to make much difference to me, you know, because I was learning. But I imagine, looking back now, that those who had difficulty, the Micken boys, you know, that some had been held back in Pennsylvania schools, you know, like 2 years in a grade, and by the time you got to fifth grade, some of them were old enough to shave, it seemed, you know, because they would be. But be that as it may, that lady taught me discipline that I've never forgotten. I don't approve what she did all the way, but I must say the results were amazing. And not once did I see any irate parent come to school. Can you? But coming now to sixth grade, she was not a good teacher, but we were departmentalized in sixth, seventh, and eighth. Now again, I met a gifted teacher. And Miss Stevens, now she had a different approach. She was, she got across the same facts and learning probably that Mrs. Hampson did, but she was kind. And now, right at 6th, 7th, and 8th grade is when the Depression hit. 5th grade, I was taking mandolin lessons, and we were still living in our new home. And then in 6th grade, my mother died. And we lost her home and all those various things, my brother. And Miss Stevens, and this was the time also we lined up for the chili and so forth. And the, of course, the coal mines, there were coke ovens. When they were stoked and all that place that wasn't, you didn't choke as you went through Brower Hill and it was all quiet, that meant no jobs. So she, Miss Stevens, would take us girls, she organized a club, and she would take us on hikes on Saturdays. And I thought that was really, looking back, there's not been a teacher, and even I have not given my Saturdays outside of Young Authors Conference to do something like that, to her home. I just thought she was probably the most inspiring. I never wanted to become a teacher like Mrs. Hampson. But although I would like to get the same results in achievement of material, but Miss Stevens was excellent. Now our principal was a teaching principal, and he would leave school mysteriously at noon, and when he'd come back he'd be in pretty foul mood. I don't know why that was. But when we were let out at recess time, all the doors were locked. Teachers enjoyed their freedom, I must say. So, and on to high school. Now, I think high school, at those times, because of the recession and et cetera, that there was a great, or depression. It wasn't any recession, it was depression. There were bread lines and the whole thing. That there was a high demand for the jobs, and I do think I had exceptionally well-qualified teachers, you know, through high school, an exceptionally good foundation in education through grade school and high school. Then in college, of course, my uncle and aunt that reared me, my uncle said no woman should go to college. You know, they have to stay home, get married. I said, I'm going to college. And my dad and brother were living at a farm and doing tenant farming then. So Dad had traded some Irish sweepstakes tickets in on a cow. My dad was a trader then of cows and horses, and he had carried these sweepstake tickets around, and here he won, which in those days, $700 went a long ways toward a college education, particularly when you traveled to the school, which was about 16 miles away at Little California. And my mother, or my aunt's egg money, and my dad's Irish sweepstakes, and my working on NYA at a quarter an hour put me through 3 years of State Teachers College, as it was called then. And then when I come out, now I told you my name was Phillips, or my name then, and Senafani and Bukovic come out with me, and they were hired. My uncle was an assessor, and in those days you had to be a Democrat. And I want to tell you about the interview. I had to interview each school board member. One had a car dealer agency, which I understood if you bought a car, you were almost sure of getting a job, but I didn't have enough money to buy a car. And the rest of them, I interviewed at beer parlors that I went to each school board member, and they interviewed me why I wanted the job. Well, I did get a job as a substitute, but it was for all year, in the coal mining town, not where I went to school, but in a neighboring one.
What was the name of the town?
The name of the town was Chestnut Ridge, Pennsylvania, but it was commonly called Royal. The post office was Chestnut Ridge, the town was called Royal. And there were 13 coal mining towns in our Redstone Township school district. And they all had an elementary school, first to eighth grade. So that first year was, there were two outbuildings like our school at Brower Hill, and then a main brick building. And that first year, I'm afraid, was a disaster for me. First of all, I came through the teaching of curriculum of the methods courses with all progressive education. And Dr. Spock and a lot of that business. Which, when I transferred it to a traditional school, was a disaster, a pure, simple disaster. Because I think, first of all, in this outbuilding, there was third and fourth grade. Who would be my buddy on the other side but that Mrs. Fell, who was still teaching, that racked me up against the cloakroom in second grade, who still sat at her desk and didn't care very much at all whether she taught the children anything or not. She was still there. And she was my fellow teacher. Then everything had to be posters. You had to make a poster for every subject and put up exactly what the child got. The teachers were very friendly, and they all said you had to come over to the main building to eat. Well, I was super conscientious, you know, and I wanted to do, you know, I just wanted to charge in there and get something accomplished, while not realizing that it takes a while to master anything. And the next thing about it was the teachers went on a strike because they weren't paid, It was a very troubled time for the teachers and supervisors. Now, we had a lot of supervision. The superintendent of schools came to visit. The principal said, "Oh, Sarah," and all those teachers told me how easy teaching was and not take it so seriously. They said, "Oh, teaching is the easiest job you can have." And I still to this day, 38 years later, have not found their secret.
Okay, you said, you mentioned two brothers. There were three children?
Yes, three children.
When did you start to school?
I started to school, I was...
Hi, how are you?
Boom, 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 with 98. You got a percentage grade averaged each month. You also took a midterm exam. You also took a final exam, and that was the same from first grade through to high school, all percentage.
Okay, and this was in the school system that...
Redstone Township High School, right, in Fayette County, Pennsylvania. Now understand, the Fayette County, the teachers all met with that, and the county superintendent came to visit you too. See, there were so many townships in the county, but they were, the county superintendent also made his rounds of all these local schools.
So you got to see him or them as you went through school,
right,
too.
I mean, they came to visit in your classroom, the county superintendent or the assistant county superintendent, the township superintendent, plus your principal. So you really had a lot of people telling you what was wrong with your teaching. And they put the evaluations on it, too.
Did they do written evaluations, or were there evaluations verbally?
No, they told you verbally, and I don't remember of any written ones. But they probably gave a written one to the principal. Probably did.
Mm-hmm. Why did you decide to become a teacher?
Well, as I told you, my aunt, when I went to live with my aunt and uncle, my Aunt Margaret, that I was named after, was a school teacher, and everybody held Aunt Margaret in such high esteem. Her things were still in the farmhouse, an eight-room farmhouse, you know, and you could wander through. And she had things about astronomy and seashells, and when I'd go to church, to our local church, they would say, "Well, you act like Aunt Margaret." I mean, my aunt must have been, she died before I was born. But everybody talked about Aunt Margaret and her teaching. And then my Aunt Catherine was a teacher. So those two inspired me. I loved my aunt, that Catherine, that lived in Cool Spring. And I just wanted to be a teacher. I just always wanted to be. Because I helped, and then the teachers that I went to school to inspired me. They were always so well-dressed, and they seemed so eloquent, and particularly Miss Stevens that I had in seventh grade. I really admired and respected.
Were most of your teachers, especially the female teachers, were most of them single?
At the time, in elementary, yes. In high school, no. Most of my elementary teachers were single at the time. I thought they were old, but they were not too old. They were young. But they did get married afterwards. Now, that Mrs. Fell was married, but I think she was the only one of the staff at that time that was married when I went to school. So out of eight teachers, seven were female and one had the title of Mrs.
Okay, you went to grade school in your hometown? This is the way it was set up in your county? Your
right,
township.
DeBriar Hill. But I lived a mile and a quarter beyond, and I really, they were kind to let me go. You live within a mile of your particular school that you went to, like Briar Hill. about a mile and a quarter. And we had to walk, though. But in high school, you did have bus transportation, but you had to walk about a mile, half mile to get the bus.
Then where you went farther, was the high school then centralized
in Premier County? Right. There were 13 coal mining towns. All 13 went to the centralized Redstone Township High School. And they were, but now in my eighth grade, only about half went on to high school. They dropped out in eighth grade. So you'd say that you had about 30 in the classroom and 13. See, that's how many would be in your freshman class plus others that may have come in. There were about 200 in my class.
Were the...
In high school, this is.
Were the times... Because it was depression by that time.
Right.
Were the times what caused these, what you feel caused these children to drop out, or was there a high dropout rate?
Well, I think that at the time, whether it had been depression or not, they would have dropped out. The girls that, some of the girls I've never seen, they went on to do housework in Pittsburgh or New York or some big city, and the fellows got jobs. Now, I don't know what the carryover, there were 5 years difference between us. My brother went to the same high school. His class was about the same as mine. So there might have been more dropouts during the 34 than there would have been maybe 5 years before that when my brother went to school, because his class was as large as mine.
How many did you graduate with?
200.
And that was a large class?
No, there were 300 and some in some schools.
How big was your class when you were back in the
grade
Briar
school.
Hill? And
Briar Hill. Well, now our class was a little smaller. It was about 27. Sometime, but in fifth grade, there were about 33. There was a big class for that portable room.
Mm-hmm.
It varied, though. I mean, classes varied. Have two sides just as they are today.
Okay, and you say you went for 3 years to college.
Right, I went 3 years and got a teaching certificate. Then I went back every summer, except the summer of 44 when I worked for the United States government in defense work, and got my degree in 46 at the same college. I went 41 and 42, I taught at Royal. Then my father died that summer of 42. So I nursed him through cancer. He had cancer of the stomach and he was sick all summer. Well, he died shortly after he had to take his bed, so to speak. 2 weeks is all he lived. Then to make arrangements for the funeral and everything. So, I told you I worked in NYA, and a girl had taught at Calcutta that I worked with in NYA, secretarial work. And she said that she wanted to be home, and she said there was an opening at Fairfield. She was being transferred from Calcutta, Ohio, to Fairfield. So it was during the war, and my cousin from near Uniontown, Pennsylvania. Uniontown was a big city, our biggest city. So Elmer and her husband come out here to Newton Falls, and he had taken a defense job. And she said, "Oh, Sarah, won't you please get a job? I'm so lonely." Elmer never left the farm. And she was very mother attached. So I was here in August of 1942, and I, on the way back by bus to Lisbon, I stopped in the county office and interviewed Mr. Roberts and was hired for Fairfield Centralized School. Well, I'd never even seen Columbiana, but I went home, told my aunt about it, and she was sorry that I was going to leave, but she said, okay. So I came out on the Friday of the teachers' meeting to Columbiana and found room and board with Mrs. Farrell on Duquesne Street. And went to the meeting. Mr. Evans was superintendent, the Dr. Evans's father. And on Monday, I started to the teacher's meeting, started to teach, but never seen Columbiana in all my life.
Where did you have these 3 years of training?
At California State Teachers College.
And where was that located again?
California, Pennsylvania.
Hmm.
It's now California State. And there are 13 state teachers' colleges then, too. Indiana, Slippery Rock, and all of those.
So that their basic curriculum was for teachers?
That's right. But each one of the state teachers' college at that time specialized in something. Ours was special education and industrial arts. And like Indiana was music, and Slippery Rock was physical education. But California was the closest. It was 16 miles away near Brownsville, Pennsylvania. And we traveled. We had a carpool. Now, it was interesting to note that I didn't have a car, so when I did my student teaching, my uncle got me a ride with the county detective of Fayette County, and I didn't hitchhike, but I sort of was in the hitchhiking part then. And I didn't tell you a very interesting thing. The teacher had been murdered in the classroom, in that portable room, had been murdered the year before. And the next year that same year that I was doing my student teaching and riding with the county detective, he was checking on that murder. And that was another disturbing thing. In the portable room, there was this big spot of blood. It was wooden floors, you know, and the stove in the back of the room. But in there was a little hallway between the third and fourth, and there was this great big spot of blood where the enraged lover had called Caroline Delamay out in the hall and shot her right there. The kids jumped out the windows. The portables were low, you know, and they lifted the windows and jumped out. And terrible. And even a year afterwards, when I went in, I thought that was gruesome.
Did you get a rug and cover it up?
I didn't get a rug and cover it up. I just walked over the spot.
Okay, what, tell us more about your college, your training that you received.
All right, my college and training. Now, mostly it was there were 62 hours approximately, or 66 hours of educational courses, teaching of reading, teaching of handwriting. You had to go through everything that the children were going through. In other words, you were sort of like the students, and the teacher would instruct you in the methods. Now, in the teaching of handwriting, for example, it was Palmer's system, so you had to pass a certificate. Now, the big thing, it was handwriting. I mean, you had to submit a specimen once a month. And everybody in your classroom, when I taught, had to have an acceptable form of penmanship. Palmer's system, you had to learn to write arm movement. Now, I'd come through the Peterson system, but I'd never learned to write arm movement. And at the college degree, I almost flunked that because that took a while to learn to write with your ball of your arm and go like that. Now, the teaching of reading, there was much we had a pretty radical professor at the time, Dr. Bontrager. He had written several books saying that basal readers were nothing, that to go through phonics was nothing. He believed that in reading, the only way you got any results was the motivation of reading, and everybody would have to be interested in what they read and do something with what they read, and they had to be on their level of what they read. So therefore, you had to have just a multitude of books. So all of the student teachers had to go to this place in Brownsville, where a very gifted teacher, I must say, had books almost from the ceiling, from the bottom of the floor to the ceiling, in all different levels of reading. And if the child was interested in dogs, why, he was reading on dogs and conducting. It was a great bit of, the emphasis at college at that time was on unit work. Everything was wound around a unit. They had a demonstration school there. And then it was called NOS Laboratory School. And in the boys and girls from Little California, as it was called, went to that school plus professor's children. Now, they tried out everything that was taught by the professors in the college. And this reading, for example, the unit would be on apples. Then it'd be Johnny Appleseed in the literature, and arithmetic would all be in the fractions of cutting the apples, and they would make applesauce and apple cookies and all that deal. But every subject had to be around the unit that you were on.
But when you taught the unit, you tried to incorporate all
subjects? All those things. You had to correlate all subjects. And that heavy book that I brought tonight was your student teaching manual, where you wrote out your units, your list of questions, your test, and etc. I mean, your test, and then if they didn't measure up to the standards, you had a retest and so forth. But you might have had a play, too, in connection with this. You had some commentating activity of a play or whatever you chose. And music was incorporated, the art. Now, even that first year, I didn't have an art teacher, but the other years, and not at Fairfield, but then in Pennsylvania, when I went back in 45 to marry Ray, who'd come home from the service, I taught in Irwin, and there was an art supervisor and a music supervisor, and they were still on this unit deal, which was the big thing. Now, coming back to the reading, not everybody agreed with Dr. Bontrager there, but he was the chief of the reading school. They had a head of each department, like the English and so forth. Now, the other teachers felt, and they sort of listened to him, but he was quite emphatic. His book was in paperback form, but we had a reading clinic there too. And he pointed the fact that there were so many non-readers because we were trying to put them through certain paces at certain times. And he was very much against everybody being on the same page at the same time and going through the hoops, as he called them.
So it sounds as though he may have been one of the forerunners of individualized education.
Right. Now, he wanted individualized reading. That was his goal. He said that you all, and that was a teacher in Brownsville, that you all should be individualized. Right. To get results, you must think of the individual. There was a great emphasis on the individual, but I was a very strong disciple of Dr. Bontrager, and then I went in this situation of traditional schools where you had to hand in advance 6 weeks your lesson plans, and you were expected to accomplish so much, and you were to be on page 108 at this time. And see, that was my conflict, you know, that I couldn't be on page 108 and think about that individual all the time and where he was, because...
Now, was this a county requirement that you had to be on a certain page at a certain time?
Right.
Or was it a statewide requirement?
Well, Pennsylvania was pretty strict. Pennsylvania schools had competency tests, and you were expected to measure up to them. I mean, we had tests all the time. Not only teacher-made tests, but tests that were like our Iowa basics, only they were competency tests, I suppose, although that was in grade school and high school. Before you went to high school, you had to take a test, and that determined your placement of where you were going to take academic or general or vocational. Well, industrial arts wasn't called vocational, but we had industrial arts, home ec, and that. And you were put in that grouping, and you weren't changed. What?
That you were put into your program and not changed.
Right. But now, when I did change from academic, I was put in the academic program, but I wanted to take typing. And to take typing, I had to change to general. I wanted to take cooking and sewing. But the classes were too crowded with the people there. If our school was very crowded, we didn't have gym because there were so many students, they had to take the gym for the students. you know, at the high school. Mm-hmm. They needed to expand, but they didn't have the money to expand because of the poor times, you know, to build more classrooms.
So they couldn't just delegate money as some districts did and say, we need more money for books and buildings and go ahead and do it.
Well, that's the way Pennsylvania schools operate. You're not, people don't vote on the bond levies in Pennsylvania. You are told the state says a new school's to be built. But remember, the whole state was practically broke at that time. So there wasn't any money for building these new classrooms that they desperately needed in the high school. And the gym had to be taken for a classroom, and that's why we didn't have physical education in high school.
Mm-hmm. So you graduated?
I graduated in 38 and went 3 years to State Teachers College and come out in 41.
Okay, with your 3 years, you had a teaching certificate.
Right. Provisional or temporary teaching certificate.
Okay, what was your temporary, what do you mean by temporary?
Well, it meant that you could teach at any school in our counties in Pennsylvania. You had a Pennsylvania teaching certificate for the 3 years. But you could only teach, say, 4 years without going back to school. Now, I went back to school immediately to get my degree, earning my money to do so. And it was $1,000 a year the first year. But they went on strike because the school board didn't have the money to pay, and the teachers went on strike because they weren't getting their pay regularly. For example, you might wait 3 months before you got paid. Now, my uncle wouldn't let me go on strike, and I was 20 when I started to teach, so the principal and Mabel Lincoln and I were the only three at the building that day, out of 8 teachers.
How long were they on strike?
I think about 2 days.
Did they get their pay?
I don't think we got our pay much quicker than what we did before, but that first year I did more with my money, I think, than any year, because I put electricity on the farm and tried to modernize the farmhouse a little bit, because I was very grateful to them. And then bought a typewriter, because I'd earned my way through school by typing, and I thought it might come in handy again. See, I was out here in Ohio, but each summer I went back to the farm. Now, my aunt died the first year I was out here.
That was in 1942?
42. Then I went back to, you know, to just visit my uncle, and went to school. And then in the summer of 44, those kids that I had gone to college with, 12 of us, went to work in civil defense to get them paid. You know, the motto, get them paid.
Okay. Okay, is there anything else you would like to tell us about your college days, courses that you took, experiences that you had?
Well,
restrictions?
Restrictions. Well, I didn't live in the dormitory, but I did in the summertime. And in the summertime, even though I was employed as a teacher, I still had to go by the 11 o'clock curfew. And several times I missed it, and I was called in the dean's office. Thoroughly enjoyed college players. And in high school, see, because I lived 4 miles from the school, I couldn't be in the plays because I didn't have a car, you know. Therefore, I could enter these activities at college because they were held in the daytime, as there were a lot of traveling students. Now, the traveling students had a room that you went to, and I suppose maybe, I don't know what minority were traveling students, but there were a lot of us. However, the plays were so that you could enter into all the activities, and I particularly enjoyed the physical education program because we had archery and basketball and rifle practice and all of those things. And the tennis courts in the summertime, I wish I had kept that instead of going into golf, because I really enjoyed tennis. And the way I had learned to play tennis was back in the farm. I had a tennis racket and a ball, and I practiced 1 hour every night hitting the ball up against the side of the barn. And when I went to college, I could play almost as well as they did, who had the tennis courts there, because I had practiced on my serve. So I really enjoyed my college days. They were fun. And Ray had started with me to school also at college, and then he went to the service. But everything about college was delightful to me, because I enjoyed going to school and the professors, and I enjoyed learning, and I enjoyed that we had a whole gang of us, 12 of us, and we still have the round robin letter, and several of them are in California. I haven't been out to see them yet. But we had a little reunion last summer of all of the girls that had gone to school together, and we had a ball. Now, four of those girls had gone with me to Newark, New Jersey. We lived in East Orange. And, of course, we were very close. All of us were close. For example, this weekend, I'm going to a wedding of one of those college girls of the 12, of her daughter that's getting married at Belle Vernon, Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. See, they were all, California was a river town, the Monongahela River. And there was Manesson, Denora, Charleroi, and all those river towns, but they came to California from back over the mountains too, because the mountains are where Uniontown, Pennsylvania, where we went to town every Saturday night as good farmers do, and that was at the foot of the mountains. But Ohio Powell was a little town, you know, on the other side of the mountains, and they grew from all of that area to this college. And they all became teachers in the Fayette County system, because it was primarily for the training of teachers. Now it's changed to a liberal arts, more or less, but then it was strictly for the training of teachers.
They had no other programs they could enter into?
No, I don't think so at the time that I went, because it was called State Teachers College. You went there with the primary purpose of entering some field of education, either supervision, industrial arts, special education, and there was a placement service that you could have, you know, to be placed anywhere in the state of Pennsylvania. The teachers were given high ratings because I feel that they did turn out a quality teacher. Now the campus of California has changed a lot. Yes, now they do all forms of degrees.
Mm-hmm. What was your student teaching experience like?
Well, the student teaching experience was at a school called Craig School in Uniontown. And when the county detective left me out again, I had a half mile up a steep hill to walk. Now, I taught in sixth grade. My teacher was a very good teacher. There were two of us. We always went in pairs to do our student teaching. We had a full semester of student teaching. We had observations to make, case studies to make, a diary to keep, our lesson plans to write, and our units to write. And as I said, though, again, I should have seen the handwriting on the wall in the student teaching days, because, again, to practice what I'd been taught, I couldn't do it even in that situation. And it the whole thing about preparing that thick manual and so forth, I found it hard to do. However, my directing teacher said that I was coming along very well and gave me encouragement. Really and truly, I was hit by a case of inferiority. I just felt I couldn't do it. Even though all my life I'd wanted to be a teacher, it was such a disappointment to get in the real thing. Now, in student teaching days, it was good because I had a strong teacher. But then when I went in the real situation and I was in charge, I just thought, I can't do this. I just can't do it.
Okay, why did you go in pairs, or why did they send the student teachers in pairs?
I do not know. I guess they felt one would help the other.
Were you both in the same classroom?
Yes, we were both in the same classroom. But we had 4th, 5th, and 6th grade in departmental setup. And you had experience in 4th grade, 5th grade, and 6th grade. Now, in the demonstration school, though, you had to take half of that semester in upper elementary and half in primary. Then you decided which one you wanted. But I wanted upper elementary. So I did, and when we went to these neighboring schools, like Uniontown, Brownsville, and the neighboring cities around, they picked out their best teachers in those outlying districts, and that's where they sent their student teachers, because there were too many to take their training at the laboratory school, demonstration school.
So the demonstration school was on the campus then?
Right, the demonstration school was on the campus, and then you had to take all the grades. You had to take first through sixth was on the demonstration school. The school that I did my student teaching was first through sixth grade. But I had to go to every school in Uniontown. There were five schools to make observations. And if they needed the substitute, you also, one day, only on real, I was only in an emergency, but one day both of us, Miss Licklider and I, were called to substitute in the high school. And I had the study hall, and it was huge. It was mammoth. There must have been 300 in that study hall. I'm scared. I wish the floor would have swallowed me up. One day we even substituted in the home ec room.
This is why you were student teaching?
Right.
Or why you
while
were?
We were student teaching.
Then basically, was the demonstration school run in conjunction with your...
With the methods course, right. With this teaching of English, teaching of reading, teaching of handwriting, teaching of mathematics, and the whole works.
Okay, whose students, where did they get the students for the demonstration school?
They got them from the town of California, Pennsylvania, and from the professor's children that lived on the campus.
So it was a combination of the town children plus the professor's children.
Right, right.
It wasn't strictly... professor's children?
No. It was a cross-section of any typical small town, which is about the size of Columbiana, California, Pennsylvania. Now, also we had the president of college, and of course I went to college when they still had the dining room and the round tables where you dressed for dinner, and you went down and you had receptions at the president's home, which was on the campus.
Okay, when you say dress for dinner, what do you mean?
Well, I meant that you had to not, this was the day before blue jeans, but you had to put on a dress and you had to, you know, just dress for dinner to have your, like, Sunday clothes on.
Did you have to go to the hat and the white gloves?
And, well, you did have to go to the hat and the white gloves when you went to the receptions, you know, like the teas and so forth. Yes, it was formal. The more formal atmosphere. When I went back to school in the 70s, you know, to Akron and University of Toledo and those different schools from the 40s to the 70s, I could see quite a contrast in, you know, how the campuses were different in those days. However, Toledo, the dormitory that we stayed in, even though it was co-ed, was not as nice as the dormitory. It was an old part of University of Toledo, the summer I went there in 77. And it really wasn't as nice as the college room that I had in California, Pennsylvania, in the summertime. Now we had air raid drills, and they were always interesting when that old air raid siren went off and you had to go to the basement for the air raid. And we did a lot of things. One time I moved every girlfriend and I moved all the beds out in the hall. And the dean had a few words to say about that. I mean, you had a matron that was on the floor. And she certainly checked your rooms and made sure they were clean and neat and you were in by 11 o'clock and all that.
Were there any other social restrictions that you had as a college student that you can think of?
Well, I don't think that you were allowed to do live-in and all that deal. I mean, you had the love life. But of course, you see, well, I went to school during the war, and naturally, from 42 to 45, when I went back to get my degree, things were, well, because of the war, everybody, as far as social restrictions, you met a soldier and some, you know, you corresponded with the soldier and all of that deal. It was a time of greater freedom, probably, than it would have been had it not been a war.
Well, then, too, you didn't stay on campus when you first went, your first 3 years.
No, only in the summertime. I went back in the summer, and then that's when I stayed on the campus. Because I was teaching out here at Fairfield, then I just stayed on the campus. I went to school all summer, and I went to school also in the winter when I was teaching at Royal.
Mm-hmm.
I took a course per semester.
Okay, when you started teaching in Royal, what was your typical day like as a teacher?
Well, my typical day started with opening exercises. You had to read 10 verses of the Bible, had the Lord's Prayer, the Pledge of Allegiance, a poem. Sometimes you had them say the Beatitudes or whatever you decided you wanted to do. Now, in Redstone Township, they gave you a folder, and it had it highlighted, these are the 10 verses to read, without comment. But later on, then, I would take, like, the story of Joseph and read that. And I did ask children about, you know, the sequential effects, events of his life, and so forth and so on. After that, you went directly into your subjects. Your reading generally came first, and then math, and you could try to get your heavy subjects out in the morning. Now, there was a stove in the back of the room, but the janitor did fire the furnace and so forth. But again, I was way ahead of my times even then. My girlfriend, whom I traveled to California with, that had the car, her dad was superintendent of one of the mines, so she had a car and all those good things. Now, she went to taught the same year as I did. She had to sweep her own room and take care of her furnace, or take care of that stove in the room. So what I had of a graded school from first, second, third on was not typical for the people of my time, really. Because my cousin, you know, the one that lived in Newton Falls, she went to a one-room school. She was in Manalan Township. Right, I didn't live very far from Manalan Township. She went to one-room school with the water bucket in the back and the dipper, and you all drank from the same water bucket and had the same teacher from first through eighth in the one-room school. But I didn't. I had first, second, third.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my first year, one morning when I went to school, there were five black faces at the window. There were five windows, and they all seemed to be having their head there. So this one, by the name of Jimmy, was a kleptomaniac. And when I would go, the teachers demanded that I eat with them because they said it was too much to work through the lunch hour, and I was too overly conscientious, so I must come over and eat. When I went back, there wouldn't be a pencil. And the whole area, every desk had been raided because the children ate in the room. But I guess they ate without supervision because we weren't there. And so I called Jimmy's mother in, and we had a long talk. She said, well, he's a kleptomaniac, can't do anything about it. So also, in starting the school, you had the health inspection, and you had to have every little hand out and look at everybody to see they were clean and neat. So this one kid's hand was always dirty. And I said, I wrote a note home to his mother and said that he must come to school clean. She wrote back in Russian. I couldn't understand. I had to get an interpreter to understand that. But she said, while I was waiting for the bus, and by the way, they did come by bus, some of the outlying part, that he fed the pigs and he didn't come back in the house to wash his hands, and that's why he was so dirty. And she would see that he was cleaned up. So
you ran the health inspection. Was that every day?
That was, I don't know whether it was every day or about once a week.
Mm-hmm. Did they have recesses?
Yes, we had morning recess and noon recess, and I think maybe afternoon.
How long was their lunch period?
Well, I think the lunch period probably wasn't more than 45 minutes. It was that long. Might only have been a half hour because we ate our lunch and talked a little bit and went right back to teaching. The day started at 9 and ended at 4. We started school at 9.
And most of the children walked, but some were bus.
Well, now some were bus, but there were very few bus because we lived right in the coal mining town. The school was right in the town. In other words, there were houses, company houses, mm-hmm. on the other side, like right across the street here. There were company houses.
Did they have a playground around the school?
Oh, yes. There's playgrounds, swings, and so forth, sliding boards in Royal. And then, of course, you had some wide areas like that where you could play Red River and whatever you did. Now, when I went to school, we always had a big playground, and we played ball and so forth. And to show you why I know the teachers had the room locked, I turned my head momentarily, and a ball hit me in the pit of my stomach, and I was knocked out. And to get me through, they had to get me through the stage. We had a stage in eighth grade. And I had to be slid through the window.
Sounds like fun. Did you have more than a stomach ache after that?
Well, I don't remember that, but I want to tell you about that stage. Once a week, each room came to this big auditorium. There was a movable door between 7th and 8th grade. And they opened that door, and every week, a different room put on a program of recitation, songs, etc. So that's where I got my beginning on the stage. At dear old Briar Hill. Now, Royal had programs, too. You had parents, when you invited the parents in to see, they'll have some little plays. Now, at California, the demonstration school, they had big productions. They had maypole dances and so forth. And they would take children to see That Time Was Gone with the Wind. And they would take the children. They took the children to see that and field trips and so forth around. Now, we didn't take field trips at Royal, but the demonstration school did. And at Craig School, we did. We went to the Coca-Cola bottling plant and the newspaper and like that. Mm-hmm. But I don't think we had bus transportation for field trips that first year. I didn't take them. At Fairfield, I took them on nature hikes because it was so beautiful there. Now, I'll never forget, I had my little group of third graders out, and a rough grouse flushed right in front of me. I was scared, because I was expecting a big bird to come up like that.
Was this out of the
centralized school? Fairfield Centralized.
On the road to Columbiana?
Yes, on the road to Columbiana.
Okay, when you first started teaching, like your first year, you're talking about Royal, did you teach all of the subjects or was it departmentalized?
I taught all the subjects, but Miss Santafani and I were good friends. We'd gone to college together. She taught my art and I taught her music.
And what grade was she teaching?
She was teaching second grade and I had third grade. There was only one of each grade. So she taught third grade art and I taught second and third grade music.
Well, were you in the same?
No, we had to leave. I was in this portable, and she was in another portable. First and second were in a portable. Third and fourth were in a portable. Fourth, fifth, and sixth were in the main building, the brick building. All the schools were brick, but the main buildings. Mm-hmm. But the portables were wood, something like McKinley School, where you know the portables out mm-hmm. there.
Well, had the schools grown so much?
Yes, the schools had grown so much sidewise because there were still immigrants coming in, you know, at the time, and they were just growing. So they put up these temporary buildings.
Well, with these immigrants coming in, were they still coming in when you started teaching, and did you have any children that had a language problem?
No, but I had trouble with the sound. It was this and that and these and those, and I could not hardly get the TH sound taught. I want to tell you an interesting experience my first year. This one boy was so bad, and his father owned the company. You know, in the coal mining towns in 41, they were not working, but still they were working at other places, and Royal, they still stayed on. But you know, you owe your life to the company store. There was generally one baron that owned everything. So this one man, and I had his son, owned the company store and controlled this city of Royal. His son was very mischievous and not very attentive. So I said he was going to get a paddling. So he ran around the room. So I had the two bigger kids hold the door so he couldn't get out. And I captured him, turned him over my knee, and paddled him. Well, in the process, he tore my silk stockings that I was wearing. So I marched down to the company store to tell Mr. Moody about his son and the fact that he would not listen, and that I had to take disciplinary measures, and I expected a new pair of stockings for the damage. And he gave them to me and promised that his son would be better.
Okay, you're talking about paddling. Were there many discipline problems?
Well, yes, there were discipline problems from the time I started. Now, the paddle, I mean, when you felt you had the paddle, now at our school and at Briar Hill, the principal did the paddling. You know, now the principal, when I taught at Royal, was a woman. And she let you take care of your own discipline problems in the room. And when you paddled, you did it right there in front of everybody. Turn them over your knee and paddle them. Or when I went to school, though, they called them up in front of the room. You put two hands, you put your head over your desk, and then the teacher worked on you that way. Mm-hmm. But when the principal paddled, for something, one boy had drawn an obscene picture on the board at recess time. And Miss Ellen had reported it to the principal. I never heard such a paddling as that, and the boy never came back to school. But it was very obscene. It would have done Hustler magazine good form.
So then, basically, you handled your own discipline.
That's right.
Started teaching.
That's correct. You handled your own discipline problems.
Did you find a major difference when you came to Ohio?
Yes, I found a major difference when I came to Ohio, because Pennsylvania schools and the curriculum were very, very strict. These are the subjects you must teach. And there were many more standards, I thought, of achievement, you know, than Fairfield, where I went to teach. Although Fairfield had an excellent staff, and they were well trained, because teachers had been experienced there and were well-versed in their subject matter. Of course, they had taught the same subject. You know, like Evelyn Albright had taught first grade. She never changed from first grade. Lulu Behrman, second grade, same thing. So I came into third grade. And that was, I think my discipline was quite different, because I was much more free than I think that some of the other teachers were, even though I did paddle if they got too bad, but I didn't have everyone sit hands folded deal.
Mm-hmm. How much were the parents involved in the schools at that time?
Absolutely not at Royal, unless you called them in. Now, you did write to them, and they did come in. And they might come to see you. Now, I want to tell you, though, in 45, things had changed drastically. When I went back to Pennsylvania, parents were in all the time, because it was a division about the schools, again, the PTA. Now, Fairfield had a very active PTA. That's the way parents were involved. Monthly PTA meetings, the parents come up and said, how was your child doing? They saw you in the street, and they asked you in Columbiana if you saw some parent. They wanted to know how their child was getting along. But they didn't. They came at the program days, and they came to PTA. And they came if you invited them, and you sent a letter home to them to come. But you didn't have regular scheduled conferences and things like that. Now, when I went back to Irwin, there was a big fight, because Irwin and North Huntington Township wanted to be consolidated. The big thing in Pennsylvania schools, they kept consolidating till they got a horrendous big district, like 800 in a class of the senior high school. And the parents of North Huntington Township didn't want to be consulted with Irwin. And the PTA meetings would be packed. And they were really angry. Big fight. But now those parents, my principal was a woman then, and she went walking through the hall with a paddle. And she again was one that demanded you eat with her. those, the principals told you what to do. So all the children ate in the rooms. Now this was, I taught third and fourth, fifth and sixth, and seventh and eighth in departmental setup. I mean, I had third and fourth in one room, fifth and sixth in one room, seventh and eighth in reading, in geography, and I think I had math. Bill Mann was hired, and then he took the math, and I had some other subject. I forget what
it was.
So
you had three different groups and three different subjects.
Right, and the school board was also, everything was in a turmoil. The school, the citizens of the town were upset. The school board was on the firing line, so the school board came to visit in the classroom, too. They wanted the first-hand picture of the educational system. I didn't know at the time that I was hired in Irwin. See, I was teaching at Fairfield, and I wanted to go back to be with my brother to start a home and wait till Raymond came home from the service. So he lived in Westmoreland County, and I went home, and we started the home together, my brother and myself, and then Ray came home from the service, and I had written to Norritonic, to Irwin, about this job. Well, Mr. Pearsall was visiting out in Cleveland, and he came a day earlier. He was supposed to come on Friday, but he came on Thursday to Fairfield School to see me teach. Then he hired me, and I, when I moved back to Irwin, then I went to teach at that school district, but again, I was in turmoil because of the upsetting conditions. Now, Miss Sipper never backed down an inch, the principal. And what she did, she was a very strict disciplinarian, and if the kids didn't follow what she said to do, they were paddled. Or a big ring was drawn on them. At noontime, if some child came down and said a child was misbehaving in the room, she'd go back and she'd draw a big circle and a little circle, and you put your nose in there and stood there for the time it was necessary. And the parents still would come to school, and they would sometimes argue with her about the discipline, and she would state in no uncertain terms what she felt about it. Now, I still correspond with this principal. She's in Florida now and is retired, and she thinks the biggest difference is in the parents trying to run the schools rather than the teachers and administrators running the school. That's her theory. But she was very good, very strong in music. I mean, a lot of music, a lot of art.
Did you have extra instructors for this?
Yes,
too?
Yes.
How often did they have these extra classes, or was it just part of the day?
It was once a week. Once a week for music and art. You had an art supervisor and a music supervisor in Irwin, Pennsylvania.
Did they have a phys ed supervisor?
No. No.
And so you had to teach your own.
That's right.
Okay, when these children went out to recess, were you responsible for being out there, keeping an eye on them?
Right.
Was one person? Or?
No, all the teachers went out. You were responsible for your own group. At Fairfield, when those children come running down the hall from the bus, you were in the room to greet them. They didn't go to any centralized place. They came directly to the classroom. Say it was a quarter after 9:00. When I came back to Columbiana, I had 38 second graders. Columbiana always had a big enrollment, like 38, 40 in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Now, after Irwin, I like Columbiana so well, I persuaded Ray to come out to Columbiana. And so we come out and we had an apartment then, and then I taught in Columbiana that year. And again, as I said, I became pregnant in January and school was over on May 31st in those days. Then I decided that I would resign after I had Jim. And I stayed home a year, and then I decided that wasn't for me, and I wanted to go back to teaching, and Ray's mother was with us, so she could take care of Jim. So I went back to teaching at Laetonia, where I stayed for 13 years. Now that was an interesting experience, because in that course I had 6 superintendents. And all of these superintendents were interested in getting their master's degree, and in some cases working on their doctor's degree. So therefore they were trying everything in the book on the teachers to see how well it worked. Mr. Hayes was the most dynamic of all the superintendents, and he Mr. Rummel was the outgoing superintendent. Mr. Hayes said he didn't come to fill his shoes, he came to fill his own shoes. And he proved it by building a new school. The teachers helped in the planning of it. And he had the campus, the Orchard Hill School, the campus-type school, which, of course, energy-wise, wasn't too good because the primary level was down where Old South Side was. The campus-type Orchard Hill had the primary and middle school and the junior high. And again, there we had a gym, but we had to teach your own physical education, but you had chars, you took chars after your gym, which we haven't done since that time. But Mr. Hayes was great on the correlation of everything. He didn't believe in teaching English from a textbook. You were to write a newspaper or compose a book. Very revolutionary for his times. And he, for example, in the new school, you didn't have a teacher's desk. You had a countertop, just like a kitchen, and you were expected to mingle around, and you had tables and your little groups and your committees and subcommittees. And he had the assistant, he brought his assistant superintendent with him, Lee McMurrin, who wasn't quite as radical, so he sort of provided the stabilizer that was needed.
Did the teachers ever get desks?
I don't think they ever did at the Orchard Hill. We never did when I was there, but when I went over to the junior high, now see at Laetonia, I come in first and second grade, and then I just progressed up the ladder, second to third, third to fourth, third and fourth combination, and then in 54 I became pregnant again in second grade. That's why I didn't take a second grade ever, because in both second grades I became pregnant. And therefore there again was an August. You know, Vivian was born in August, and then 6 weeks afterwards, I went back to teach. But again, by May, Laetonia was the place where it had the big music. Now, when you come to the Big M, it was Laetonia. Because each music teacher put on extravaganza. The year I was pregnant was Vivian, it was Pinocchio. And we had to walk from Old Southside up to the senior high school to put on that production. If you'd seen me waddling up that hill.
Okay. How long have you been teaching now?
38 years.
This is your 38th year.
Right.
So you have seen some major changes in education.
Right.
Which ones stand out in your mind?
Well, I think probably the training of teachers and the parents' attitude towards schools. You see, a teacher was held in great respect. In the coal mining town, the important thing was to bring home a good report card, and what the teacher said went, and if you got a paddling at school, 9 cases out of 10, you got one at home. Now we have seen it come down to the where teachers are held in, I would say, modest, on a scale of 0 to 10, probably 3 to 5. Whereas the teacher is not, and maybe she shouldn't, he or she, the person shouldn't be the extreme authority that they were, but the complete lack of respect for teachers, I don't think is too good, because it's rubbed off on the pupils. In other words, what children used to do in high school, they do in junior high, and what they used to do in junior high has now come down to the middle school, and what the middle school used to do has now come down to primary. You didn't have open defiance in primary grades. I mean, you still went to school in a primary and you thought, well, the teacher's the greatest. And I think still the teacher should try to work up to the greatest, because after all, you are a model for children. And that's the way I was trained to teach. I mean, that you're, my English always wasn't the best, but I did try to work on it, and the same thing with everything. And maybe the teachers have brought it on themselves, I don't know. Enough about the teachers as a group, maybe, to know whether they have brought a certain amount of this lack of respect upon themselves.
Well, you also mentioned something about the parents.
Yes, now the parents would come to talk to you, but they wouldn't say, as one parent said this year, you know, criticizing certain methods that I had in the classroom. I mean, we all realize we're individuals and are working, but parents didn't take upon themselves to say, after they'd read an article in McCall's or Reader's Digest, now that is it. You know, I read in Reader's Digest, therefore I'm now authority upon why Johnny can't read and so forth. I think the media has been largely to hold for this. They publish articles of education. Sometimes they have the facts and sometimes they don't. Parents read these periodicals and they think they have all the answers in one thing. And again, it used to be in teaching that you felt, that maybe I did feel, that I couldn't fulfill what the professors had taught me. Now I feel that I can't fulfill what the parents expect of me. They expect me to take their child and take care of him in a different way than what I think I was trained to do.
Well, okay, what would you like to see changed? Or how would you
well,
like to see
I think
now changed?
I think the Citizens Committee, it seems to me that of course, as I said, even in 45, there was a lot of bitterness concerning the schools. There was a lot in Laetonia in the 13 years with these six different superintendents. For example, Mr. Hayes left our school district where he was well respected and went to Dover, and they almost kicked him out. They wouldn't take any of that radical approach. Where we have to sometimes, or another thing, I want to go back to how I came to be hired in Salem. Mr. Smith was the superintendent. He brought several of the assistants over there at Laetonia, and they hired us. You know, when we came to apply in Salem, they hired the teachers they had observed in Laetonia. But it seemed to me in Laetonia there was a great, there was a feeling that we could talk to parents. And here, I'm not so sure that after you talk to a parent that it makes very much difference one way or the other. They seem to have their ideas set in what they want. You think they're willing to change? I don't think so. Once they made up their mind that this is the way the schools are going to be run. And then too, they're not as open as what they used to be. The parent immediately would come to school at the first sign of what was going on. Now, you know, in a coal mining town, and when the houses were all around you, they saw exactly what the teachers were doing. And they would tell you. I think the Citizens Committee is a good thing that we're starting in our schools, and I think I've worked very satisfactorily with my parents this year, although I found several that have come in to help, and yet they've gone out to hinder by their gossip. Now, of course, we've always had gossip, so that's nothing new. I mean, to talk about a teacher and so forth and so on, that's nothing new, because that's been going on. And I can't say that even in 38 years, the biggest thing I see is a difference in the hardware of teaching. You know, film strips, we had slides but we didn't have film strips. But I'm wondering, when they see the tube all the time, whether all the audiovisual is as great as what we'd like to make it, or whether they wouldn't want to talk and discuss, which they do not get a chance to do, I don't think, at home.
It's an idea. Is there anything else? We have a few minutes left. Anything else you think that we have missed you'd like to make a few final comments on?
Well, I want to make a comment on 4th Street School, because that seems to be in Salem the beginning of the end. I taught at 4th Street. I taught on the second floor, and when all those children would come down, you'd see the steps go up and down. And everybody thought 4th Street was such an example of architecture and it shouldn't be torn down and so forth. But I thought 4th Street, I mean, it just was a monstrosity to me. I didn't think there was anything cheerful about 4th Street at all that they talked about. When you're having children go up the board and raindrops keep falling on their head, you know, and all of that, I am not of the impression that the people of Salem are about 4th Street, although I did like the large rooms. I do like blackboards all the way around the room. But then when 4th Street collapsed, and we went out to Riley School, first of all, timber lanes had to be built. That came priority number one before the completion of Southeast School. So we were holed up for 6 weeks at Riley School in the cafeteria. We had sort of like curtains up in between us. Well, two teachers in our group of four could not take this closeness, and they were always bickering. Now, that started me on probably the happiest part of my teaching experience with Mr. Miller, and we sort of taught together rather than having one jabbering here and one jabbering on the other side of the curtain. He would take a subject and teach all 60, and then I would take a subject to teach all 60. That went on for 6 weeks, and then we moved to Southeast School, where we had Mr. Pond as our principal until Mr. Jones came. Again, I feel about the walls there and just the door. You see, there's so many phases of education. Now, they said it was because of windows breaking, but I still like to, because I taught at Fairfield, where you look out that beautiful countryside, and I was a country girl, and I still think with that beautiful scenery up there in the hill, that blocked a lot of what I'd call just cultural advantages, to have those walls. And I thought it was too noisy, you know, that I thought the buildings, if there had been different tile put in those buildings, it would absorb the sound better. But the years with Mr. Miller were very happy, and then I was transferred, and that was not as pleasant as what I'd like to have had it to be. But this year I have a very delightful group, and I think I'm finishing up a lot better than what I started.
Fantastic.